Just after 8 o'clock, you're listening to Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, flagship of the Vegas Golden Knights. I'm Brian Feldman, and this is Out of Line. We're here every Sunday, live in the Fox Sports Residential Bank Corp studio in Las Vegas. The we includes co-host Caleb Herring, the last UNLV quarterback to lead the Rebels to a bowl game. Caleb is part of the UNLV football broadcast team and co-hosts the UNLV Coaches Show.
Yeah, we got to change that name.
Along with, well, you see what I did there?
There's a lot of advertising that got to change now.
It's got to change. That's it, man. New promos. But the Coaches Show, along with Russ Langer on our sister station, ESPN The Leader. Also, a fixture on the show, producer Chris Magnum Chapman, who also serves as the locker room reporter for Vegas Golden Knights radio game broadcast. And behind the tripod, the best!
The worst!
An only intern. For the show, the best. We'll give him the. He could be the best intern, right?
Yeah,
since you only have one.
Of course, okay. Of course, he could be.
You're
the best.
Best, man. There you
and
go.
And he's also wearing, along with me, we're representing Star Wars for whatever reason. We great minds think alike. He's wearing a Star Wars ugly Christmas sweater. There's nothing ugly about it. That's great. The Sith Lord wearing a Santa hat. That's great.
And you're wearing something I bought my son when he was 3 years old.
I'm wearing a Star Wars sweater. If you can't see it, if you're on Facebook, you can see it. It has all of the
looks
posters
like pajamas
from the original
have bed
Star Wars
sheets
movies
that look like that.
I was
going to
say pajamas.
This is a Star Wars collector's piece, okay? Love this.
It
and
is.
It's I'm wearing it actually in honor of beating the game, Jedi Fallen Order. I beat the game.
That didn't
and I
take
played
long.
On I played on Jedi Master too. So I
wow.
I'm something like a gamer. Okay. So if I had the time, I would have a Twitch account.
So
but
he
I don't
deserves
have
to wear the shirt, is what he's saying.
Is he better at being a Jedi Master or better at playing quarterback?
The Force is strong in both areas, sir.
Listen, the show is also streaming on the LV Sports Network and seen on Facebook Live. The page is called Out of Line. That's OUTTALINE. And you can watch on our personal Facebook pages as well. The show is live and interactive, meaning your calls are welcome. The Fox Sports Residential Bank Corp studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
How banged up and how tired the Rebels were coming into this game. 83-50, our final.
Minute 45 left in the extra period. Puck comes out toward the middle, and a shot, they score! Ryan Pulock rips it by, and New York wins it in overtime, 3-2.
Yeah, both UNLV and the Vegas Golden Knights lost their last outing. We'll be talking about that in less than 1 hour. We will know who is playing. We'll know who's playing each other in the college football playoffs as the selection show starts at 9 a.m. Pacific time. So right after the show, you want to check that out. I don't think it's any mystery who the four teams are going to be, but it is a mystery what ranking they're going to have, at least the top two. So we'll talk about that. And again, UNLV did take a bad loss on the road yesterday after winning a real tight one in their Mountain West opener against Fresno State. We'll talk about that. And the Vegas Golden Knights, although they've been playing a lot better lately, they lost their last game Thursday night in overtime to New York Islanders, who are one of the hottest teams in hockey. So not a terrible loss there on the road in overtime, but we'll talk about that as well. Plus, we'll be talking NFL Week 14, and we'll give you our picks of the week, which the last 2 weeks, we've been on fire. 4 for 4 2 weeks ago. Last week, we were 3 out of 4, so hey, maybe it's actually worth listening to us right now. That's What's on Tap, thanks to Residential Bank Corp. If you are looking to buy a home or refinance the home you're in, choose a company you can trust at Residential Bank Corp. We listen, you win.
Facts this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Yeah, it's a fact that in just under an hour, the college football playoff selection show will be on. This will be by far the easiest four-team selection decision that they have had to make in the history of the college football playoffs. The only decision left is who will be number one. They say there's three teams with the possibility of being number one because all three are 13-0. But based on strength of schedule and playing ranked teams, Clemson really falls out of that mix. And it comes down to LSU and Ohio State. Ohio State jumped in front of LSU a couple of weeks back, and they said it was because of the consistency of play of Ohio State, which you can justify. But I would say LSU's consistency has been just as good. I would say LSU quarterback yesterday solidified the Heisman Trophy. I don't think there's any question about that. And I think based on the fact, Caleb, that they've beaten five teams ranked in the top 10, which I think has been done one other time in a season in the SEC – You got to give LSU the nod for the number one seed,
not just
right?
top 10, but they knocked off two teams that were in the top four along the way. I mean, Bama at the time was in the top 31
game home winning streak they brought to an end.
So beating them, I think after that win, they should have just been number one for the rest of the season because there's nothing that can take that away. And then to top it off with an SEC championship where they completely and thoroughly dominated Georgia, there's no reason to say that they couldn't be number one. And if you look at the Ohio State game, just looking off that championship weekend, they actually were down for a lot of that game to Wisconsin, and Wisconsin kind of threw the game away in more ways than one. But, I mean, of course, Ohio State's a better team. They came back and won, and they should have. But just looking at that in their last outing, I think LSU's last outing was more impressive. So, and, of course, they have I think what you do is you set up for that to be the championship. That's the most important thing. I want that to be the championship. So it would be 1-2 LSU being number one and Ohio State being number two, in my opinion, and then those two set up to meet in the championship. I think matchup-wise, it's the most fun game because I would love to see Chase Young chasing around Joe Burrow. That would be the most fun championship. How do they handle that? But like you said, I think LSU deserves the number one spot if anybody's trying to split. Clemson hasn't really they played the JV schedule of all of the top four teams. I mean, honestly, the ACC's been terrible.
Is it their fault they're in the ACC?
It's not their fault. They're located in the ACC. They've played well when they need to. They've had some close calls also, though, in the ACC. But, I mean, they're playing well down the stretch. But it's a shame because I don't think, personally, I don't think Oklahoma's not in the top four, in my opinion. Like, just if I could have picked a top four, I wouldn't have wanted to see Oklahoma.
Put it this way, though, Caleb.
I think they're capable. There's the conversation of stretching and seeing out to the top eight. But I think the top four, you limit yourself because you can always say there's somebody else that should have been number four.
Here's the thing with Oklahoma, and I think you'll agree with me. I mean, offensively, no question, Jalen Hurts has done a tremendous job,
right.
and winning a conference championship in the SEC and the Big 12, it's unprecedented. It's really cool. He's going to be the first quarterback to ever play for two different teams in the FBS playoffs, which is really cool. And if you look at Oklahoma, you're talking about Jalen Hurts and their offense, but really look at them defensively this year. Their front seven on defense has done a great job of pressuring quarterbacks all season long. And I'll tell you what, in order for them to, I'll say, you know, to give them a puncher's chance at winning a game in the FBS playoffs, they are going to have to get after the quarterback, and it's going to be a tall order because the offensive line of all three of their prospective opponents
it's like a stone wall.
Oh my God, how do you get through? But Oklahoma has found a way to do that. They're very athletic up front.
Yeah.
And you know, but like I said, their defense is going to have to play lights out. I just think they're very overmatched, you know, whether it's going to be LSU or Ohio State. I think they'll play LSU. I think we're all in agreement.
Right.
Although the committee might not want to flip-flop based on the fact that Ohio State...
No, they'll flip-flop because it's LSU, and it's an SEC team. I think there's nothing more satisfying to people that are in charge
than for the SEC to be the top team. And not only that, I mean, you know, again, going back to what we talked about briefly, you know, the Heisman Trophy is probably going to go to Joe Burrow. This guy... 28 for 38, 349 yards, four touchdowns. He surpassed Tim Couch for the most passing yards in a season in the SEC. And then yesterday, with his first touchdown of four passes, which was his 45th of the season, he now has 48 total. He surpassed Drew Locke's SEC record. And it's pretty impressive what this guy's done, Caleb. Historically, he has been one of the most accurate pocket passers in the history.
78%,
I think. 78%
in the history of the FBS. 78%.
It's unbelievable.
It's ridiculous.
You know, and he's doing this in a modified West Coast type system. They call it a spread offense.
It's a spread because here's the thing that I appreciate about it, because you look at like a Baker Mayfield's career. His completion percentage was high at Oklahoma, and so was Kyler Murray's. But it's because they throw like 10 bubble screens a game. And Joe Burrow doesn't really throw bubble screens. And there's a lot of command and control that he has on the field to check and audible the things. And he checks it out.
I was going to ask you this, because you know this like the back of your hand. A lot of the routes they run at LSU, you see on Sundays.
Yeah, they're NFL concepts.
It's an NFL concept of offense.
And they're designed to take advantage of schemes rather than being designed to go to space that is usually traditionally open, like the flood concept and been run to death, I think, at all levels. They run things that are design pick routes, design rub routes that are legal to create openings for their playmakers, and that's what they've been doing. I think it's a beautiful system to watch, and Brady's going to make a lot of money next year to be kept by LSU. I think he might have a drop-off in the offensive production once Burrow's gone, but honestly, it's a great system to run. And as a quarterback, watch it. I'm like, man, if you know it,
it's
if you grasp
it, how fun would
that
be? Yeah,
it's amazing. Like some of the stuff that they when they show the replay, I'm like, that's a great route to call. Like he's gonna be the route's gonna be open. I just have to know which one's gonna be the open one against his coverage. And Joe Burrow is the one that knows it. So credit to him. Because he knows exactly where every route is. He goes through his progressions really quick. He's never rattled. And he finds the open guy more often than not. So that, I mean, he's a stud. He should win the Heisman. It should be the first unanimous. I don't know if it is the first. We didn't even look it up. But I don't feel like anybody should get a vote other than him. I think what he's done at LSU, who's the best team in college football right now.
Well, here's the thing.
All season long, he's been consistent. He's had Heisman moments where it's, you know, him against Alabama, the 18-yard run to
the
Tyson.
The pass against his body yesterday was unbelievable.
That moment in the championship, the 71-yard play, it didn't end in a touchdown, but juking the same guy twice, scrambling, throwing it 40 yards downfield, and making a 71-yard completion where you should have been sacked for a 10-yard loss. Those are Heisman moments, and I think, of course, him being a quarterback helps. I think the next best player in college football has been Chase Young, and he was suspended for two games, so I doubt it he even makes the trip to New York. I think it's going to be three quarterbacks, Jalen Hurts, Justin Fields, and Joe Burrow. Runs away with it, though.
And I agree, and that's the one thing. I look back on the entire season, the body of work of Louisiana State this year, and
I've never heard anybody say it like that.
Yeah, Louisiana State, calls them
that's
that.
That's hilarious.
I know, right?
That's
LSU.
Hilarious.
I mean, you know, something different. But my point is that this guy did not have a bad game this year. I was looking back statistically at each game last night of the season. There is not one bad game. There's barely an average game. Every game is above average consistently, and there's five or six great games, including yesterday.
He has an argument for the greatest single season for a quarterback
ever
in the FBS history.
Yeah.
And there's an argument for, a legitimate argument for that being a fact. Not just, I mean, they go undefeated and win it all. You say, yes, he was the greatest college quarterback to ever play in college. You have that argument with him.
Well, you do, and you look over at Ohio State, and I'll get your thought in a minute, but Justin Fields, you know, he was in the running for a while, and you got to think of something. Justin Fields is only the sixth player in FBS history with 40 passing TDs and 10 rushing TDs in the same season. That's pretty damn impressive,
pretty good.
Too.
Pretty good.
And, to think that he played behind Jake Fromm, do you think Kirby Smart at all is saying, man, I maybe should have looked at this competition a little better?
That's when the stubbornness of coaches, this is I think the greatest attribute of a coach is
Are you listening?
Why would you do that?
Because
was totally unwarranted.
Because that's what you're talking about.
Oh my God. No, the greatest attribute is to tailor your system to your best players. I think Jake Fromm is a great system quarterback for the Georgia system of running the ball first, play action pass, kind of methodical game management type thing. Yes, but if he's not your best player, are you able to adjust so your best player can be on the field? Justin Fields is better than Jake
Fromm. Your offensive coordinator needs to take your best quarterback and put a system around him, right?
That's what I'm saying. Like, coaches need to be able to do that instead of getting players and try to jam them into a system. Make the system fit your players. That's how you make your team better. Like, Justin Fields is better at Ohio State. He's a better quarterback, and he's playing in a better system for him. And that's why he's going to be second in the
Heisman. Are you
going
to say Ryan Day is a better coach than Kirby Smart?
No, because Ryan Day didn't implement the system at Ohio State. I mean,
he saw the talent of Justin Fields to go out and get him to come to Ohio State.
We'll see what happens with Ryan Day when all of Urban Meyer's players are no longer.
Ohio State's better because they have better players. And that's the Jim Harbaugh, why hasn't he beat Ohio State in the past? Because they're better. Like, can we just leave Jim Harbaugh alone when it comes to that? I mean, Jim Harbaugh has underperformed as a coach at Michigan.
Here's the deal, though.
But
again,
Ohio State's hard when
Justin
they're good.
Fields played very lousy in the first half. But again, it's halftime adjustments.
You love this.
I love it, because the bottom line is we saw it in the Ohio State game. Did we not? Did we not see? I mean, the bottom line is, how many points did Wisconsin score in the second half? Tell me that. And also, considering that their running back, Jonathan Taylor, was the first player this year to rush for over 100 yards against Ohio State.
Yeah.
And yet, how many points did they score in the second half? Do you know?
None. They didn't score any.
None.
Now,
I mean, I turned it off.
There's so much to go on here. First of all, can we eliminate conference championship games?
Yeah, I'm going to go the opposite way.
Because I'll tell you what.
I love them. I love conference championships.
They're dumb. They're dumb for this reason.
People get hurt.
Well, not only that, but
people get hurt.
The Pac-12 took themselves out of having a chance at playing for a national title. Wisconsin, Virginia.
Virginia shouldn't
have had zero business being in any type of. Because what was there to gain?
Nothing.
They Wisconsin wasn't going to leapfrog everybody and get into the net. You know what? If the conference championship game meant you got to play in the championship playoff,
and that's
fine.
It's not like basketball.
That's where I'm going to go with this. I love the conference championship
because, you know,
because it gives everybody
Virginia,
a chance.
If, had Virginia beaten Clemson, they're still playing in a crappy bowl game in Florida on December 30th.
So this is my thing. I love conference championships just because it's always somebody that knows somebody. Like, the teams always know each other. They're familiar. So it's
way,
fun
though,
to play that
thank
way.
Thank God for conference championship games, because I'll tell you what.
I didn't want to see Utah.
Love the Pac-12.
I didn't want to see
but
Utah.
But Utah would have been a disgrace in
no,
that
but,
game.
But
at least Oklahoma has a puncher's chance,
no,
as
they
I
don't.
Said.
They're going to
both. The number 14, no matter.
How many points did they give up? The Big 12 defenses are atrocious.
The number 4 team, whoever it was, is up against it. But
Oklahoma couldn't even. They barely beat Baylor with the third string quarterback. They had to go to overtime.
That's true.
I'm not going to disagree with
you. You know what? The best team that's honestly,
Oregon.
Oregon's better than Oklahoma.
I would have loved to see Oregon.
Oregon play Oklahoma. I don't know that they're better than Oklahoma.
But that's the thing. How great would it have been if we said the hell with this stupid conference championship game?
All the
instead added another week of the playoff.
I think there should be 8 playoff teams. I've said that at the beginning. I'm like, you're still going to run into trouble.
I think we say the conference championships is a round in the playoffs.
Yes.
So and it's sort of like the wild card round. Like, so the conference champions is still, it's still there. Basically, the winner of that advances to the playoff.
The Power 5 conferences are getting 5 seats.
Every conference champion gets into the playoff.
Now,
that's the best way to get the nation to see, this is why we pick a top four from these conferences.
So 5
all the time.
Conference champions and 1 at large?
Yeah.
And two buys for the number one and two teams.
Exactly.
That's
so
the way
you,
I've
so,
said it.
So you go that way, but then the risk is the NCAA and the powers that make all the money off of this crap, the risk is every game throughout the season won't be as interesting, because every game you can't lose one game the way it is now and still be in the top four. There's just too many good teams.
But here's the thing:
Ohio State
could have lost yesterday and they'd still be in the playoffs.
Yeah, at this point, yes, I 100% agree.
LSU could have lost and they'd still be.
Clemson could have lost to Virginia. No, they would have been out.
But here's the thing: for the Mountain West, and it didn't happen, fortunately. But, like, hypothetically, now Memphis was ahead of Boise State in the rankings.
Yeah.
But let's say that they weren't, and Boise State was the top non-Power 5 school. If they lost to Hawaii, they would have cost the conference millions of dollars, because they would have been leapfrogged by Appalachian State, by Cincinnati, whoever else was behind them. I mean, if assuming there was a MAC team in there. So for the Mountain West, it's stupid to have a conference championship game, because you're generally going to have a team that's close to playing in that, whatever they're calling it, the New Year's Day Bowl against
Cotton Bowl,
whoever they're going to be playing. Whether it's they may actually, you know what, Boise may end up playing Oregon.
Yeah, Boise ends up playing
or
Oregon,
even worse,
and Utah ends up playing in the Vegas Bowl.
They may be, oh man.
Utah and Hawaii.
No, Utah's not gonna. Utah won't play in the Vegas. I think the fifth play, whoever it is, Cal or some Arizona State.
But is it like the fifth Pac-12 team plays?
Now all that changes next year when the Las Vegas Bowl gets too much higher profile. They're gonna
put the Pac-12 champion, if it's not going to the Final Four.
Yeah,
I feel like that would be the move. Put the Pac-12 champion, the Mount West,
after this year.
I think it alternates a Big 12, SEC.
One of the things before I get off this real quick, because I want to we've got the selection show coming up a little bit, but you know, Clemson. Everyone has completely discarded this team, and yet Trevor Lawrence has never lost a football game as a collegiate athlete.
Yeah,
and also.
Well, he's playing high school teams.
You can't.
He's playing Bishop Gorman.
I'm not going to disagree. Unfortunately, the ACC, Florida State, Miami are nothing like they used to be, and I agree. But again, this team has never lost, and you've got to give Dabo Sweeney credit, not just for winning, like you said, high school games, but for the recruiting this guy has done. He has been one of the best recruiters in the country.
Absolutely.
So are you saying that Dabo Sweeney is not good enough to devise a game plan with a team that hasn't lost since this kid has played quarterback to beat one of these two teams? Is it possible?
LSU or
Ohio State. Is it possible?
They can beat them, without a doubt. But
there's no one saying it, Caleb. I mean, I'm looking at ESPN, and they've got like a 13% chance of winning a game. game. No, that's an undefeated team that you're giving a 13% chance.
You know what's funny about this is because it's been like that every year, though. And Clemson's won it, what, twice?
Once, but
they've won it once, they've been twice. And they've been in convincing fashion twice.
And they've been there almost every year, too.
Every year. So, but, and again, credit to the fact that they're playing a crappy schedule that helps them get there. But at the same time,
they
always win. That's what I'm saying. Like, they've proven time and time again that they deserve the credit and the recognition. But for whatever reason, nobody gives it. They're the reigning champs right now. They're sitting at number three as an undefeated team. That doesn't make sense anywhere else except when you have committees that don't have rules.
Last thing,
there's no rules for the committee, and they can do whatever they want. So that's why I wouldn't be surprised if they said, Bama's number four. Like, that wouldn't even shock me.
I agree, but oh my God, can you imagine that? A two-loss Bama team leapfrogs Oklahoma that wouldn't, like, that would be great.
That'd be awesome.
I mean, the bottom line is, we would know Nick Saban had an influence on he's got something going on there as well. But can I ask you this last question, and we'll move on? I do want to talk a little about UNLV basketball before the break, but right now, you're an NFL scout. You got your choice of quarterbacks right now in college. Do you take Joe Burrow? Do you take Trevor Lawrence?
Why are you asking me this?
I want to know.
This is a stupid question, Brian.
What? No, it's not.
You take Joe, for all the reasons, you take Joe Burrow. He's the best player in college right now, so that's number one. Then number two, we just talked about it before, he's running NFL-type plays. So he gets the system.
So he's
going to
be ready before Trevor Lawrence.
I think he has a bit of a learning curve. Yes, the edge goes to Joe Burrow.
So if you need a quarterback, but
he's played SEC defenses all season long, and he's dominant. He played Alabama and threw for 400. Alabama's defense, Auburn's defense, those defenses in the SEC are the closest thing, Georgia's defense even, are the closest thing you're going to get to a college player playing against NFL
defenses. I understand
defenses.
All of that.
So he's the most NFL-ready guy.
Okay, but who do you think long-term is going to be a better NFL quarterback?
Joe Burrow.
You think Joe Burrow will?
Trevor Lawrence throws the ball into jeopardy all the time. Against the ACC, he had, what, 9 picks on the season in the ACC?
He's a bit of a gunslinger.
If you go in the ACC, and he's been very inaccurate at times, so just watching him on the tape, not even just throwing interceptions, but he's been inaccurate. I haven't seen a game where Joe Burrow, I've been like, he's all over the place. He's scatter shooting. I've never seen it from him. I've seen it from Lawrence. He's a better athlete. I'll give you, he has tools and potential, but he's not as ready as Joe Burrow right now.
I think long term,
Joe Burrow will have a better career. He's ready for the NFL. I could say that right now. Okay. But Lawrence is not. I'm not saying he's terrible. He's not far off. He's probably one of the better. He's better than Hurt. What's his name?
Jalen Hurts, or better than Justin Fields, or better than no.
Not at the end. Not finished product. I don't think. I think Fields has a chance to be better than him. Finished product for the NFL. I was talking about Herbert from Oregon. I think he's better than. They're kind of the same kind of build, but I think he's better than him. So he's probably the second quarterback I'd take this year. But especially with Tua being injured. But no, Joe Burrow is, I think, the most NFL ready. I think he's shown that he's capable of grasping an NFL type system and commanding one, and he makes great decisions. He's athletic enough to get by, so
all right.
I don't see why anybody would not take Joe Burrow first.
I don't think it's a bad decision, but it is a good question.
That's
because
why I love college football, because who would have said that at the beginning of the season, that Joe Burrow is going to be the best quarterback this year?
Nobody.
Nobody would have said that.
In the middle of the season.
It was Tua, Herbert,
as good as
Lawrence.
He was playing, they weren't even talking mid-season about him winning a Heisman Trophy.
Of course, I got to give Justin Fields some credit, because everybody wrote Justin Fields off, too. Yeah. When he transferred from Georgia, like, what do you think's going to happen? You go to Ohio State, you think you're going to play? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, he did.
And then he goes and he plays, and he's in the Heisman running. So, I mean, he'll be back next year, so.
It's going to be interesting.
College football, gotta love it.
You do. And this year has been one of my favorite in the past 10 years. I've really enjoyed college football this year. It's been really cool. And like I said, you've got three teams that I think legitimately could win a national championship.
Just imagine these guys are getting paid, too, to do this.
They should be getting paid. I have said for years, Caleb, that college athletes should be stipend. It's really unfortunate that they do not develop a system for college athletes to be stipend. And, you know, and a scale of, you know, not, we're not talking about a lot of money, a couple $1,000 a month.
And not even that. Just the ability to make money off of your name.
Yes.
Like Joe Burrow right now could be a millionaire off of his name
100%.
In Louisiana right
now. He's got to frustrate the hell out of you watching kids walk around campus wearing your jersey and knowing that the athletic director and coach are the ones making
you
the money off it.
You literally get suspended off of it.
Yeah, if you made any money, if you went and signed a couple of autographs for money on the jerseys, you're going to get... Yeah, it's really ridiculous. All right, real quick, turning over before we go to break, UNLV basketball. You know, they did get a win on the road in their first Mountain West Conference game against Fresno State, that people said Fresno decently coached team, a good team. They win 81-80 on the road. People got a little bit excited, like, wow, you know, they barely lost to Cincinnati. They barely lost to Kansas State. Maybe this is a team that can play. You know, a California, they should have beat Cal. But then they go to BYU, and they get beaten by 33 points and blown out by a BYU team that definitely has some offense. This team can play from the perimeter, but this is not a really great BYU team, a team that might even not make the NCAA tournament, and they get beat by 33 points. Is that should we be concerned?
I mean, I think BYU, even though you say they might not be a tournament team, I think BYU is still a class above UNLV right now.
And it's a tough place to play.
It's a tough place to go play on the road, yeah, of course. I think they're just UNLV is in a point of transition where playing a team that has a set identity and who has their kind of – who has it figured out, I should say. BYU maybe not be a tournament team, but they have it figured out at least. And they have some chemistry definitely to go there. They have people that can score and shoot the ball. And they played good in transition, which is really where they killed the Rebels early and like kind of – ran away with the thing in the first half. So, I mean, UNLV, I don't think it's that game should necessarily be the one that you push panic on, because this year's kind of expected. Like, the things that are happening, losing competitive games and going to overtime three times already this year, those things are going to happen. And you're going to take some losses like this when you're in transition, especially when your rotation's like eight guys. Like, you don't have depth on at any position right now, and you got one guy that's pretty much the heartbeat of your offense. And teams figure that out, especially when more and more film comes out during the season. BYU figured it out and played them defensively how you should play them if you're trying to stop UNLV. They made it tough for Hardy to get going.
Don't let Hardy get a shot off inside of 15 feet.
And UNLV's talked about it. I mean, Otzelberg has talked about it, that teams are going to start doing that. They're going to start blitzing the screens with Hardy and double-teaming him, getting the ball out of his hand. Can you find offense anywhere else? And they didn't find it anywhere. They scored 50 points and got blown out, like you said, by 33. So, I mean, that's... these kind of growing pains are going to be expected. I think BYU is just the first team that had it together enough to game plan and really take it to them the way that, you know, they're capable of being beaten this year. But I don't think it's any time for anybody to panic, because if that's what gets you to panic is a big loss like that, then you really don't understand what it takes to build a team up, to create an offense, to create chemistry. That's you're going to have lumps like this along the way. So BYU's a good team. They're a solid team, and they took it to us. That's all you can say about it.
Yeah, Mags, and I'll tell you a couple of things. You know, one guy we thought we'd probably be seeing more floor time, Chekta Dembele, has really fallen off as far as his play goes. He's hardly seeing the floor at all. And Jonah, I mean, I know he's hurt. How hurt is this guy? Is it going to be a redshirt year for him? What is going on? Because all I heard about from Otzelberger and the couple of times I heard him at press conference talk was how great this kid from Australia was going to be and how important and instrumental he was going to be to the success of UNLV this season. And, you know, he's hurt. I mean, is he really this hurt? I mean, what the hell happened to him?
He could be. Possibly.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know.
How do we not know, though? Isn't that bothersome?
Because they generally don't disclose those types of things.
Play it close to the vest.
Yeah.
Play it close to,
I'm fine with that.
He could be redshirting.
You know what? Here's the thing. People get all bent out of shape about injury reports in college. I mean, I get it from a betting angle. But quite honestly, as a member of the media, I don't really need to know what's wrong with the kid. It's not that important to me.
Is he available or not?
That's what I'm saying. Is he going to play this year? Can someone answer that question?
Well, I mean,
this year—that's a long time. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's until
at a certain point in the season, if he hasn't played, he might redshirt. Then you can start.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't think at this point you speculate that yet. But if it continues to go on through December and into January, then you say maybe he's just redshirting. Maybe whatever the injury was, it's serious enough where he can get a redshirt out of the field.
I mean, if it's something
and
severe,
you do that for the long-term building
if it's
of the
something
program.
Severe, then maybe they're waiting to see. Maybe he needs surgery. Maybe he had surgery. We don't know. And you know, I guess I understand people.
Well, maybe his injuries why he couldn't hit the broadside of a barn from 5 feet away. Was he hurt in the first couple games?
He may have been. I mean, he looked good in the first game.
Never know.
The first game he did, but since then, no. That's what I'm saying. I'm wondering. Like, I just want someone to tell me. That's all. Like, I don't know.
I'm not gonna like panic. But I'm seeing some things early on that I think are cause for concern with this team.
With the coaching staff?
Yes, me too.
Me too.
And, I mean, I'll wait and see.
Sometimes, Mags, it looks like I'm watching backyard basketball.
Yeah, I mean,
and that's an unorganized bunch of guys out there, and that's a scary thing.
To be honest, this team probably would have been better this year with Marvin Menzies at the helm.
There it is.
I'm not going to disagree. I'm not disagreeing.
Here's the thing.
Go ahead.
Maybe not long term, because I need to see more of Otzelberger to obviously have an opinion on it.
Yeah.
But for Rebel fans who wanted, they're tired of losing.
Who would you rather have, Dottie Tillman or Joel Embiid?
I think I'd rather.
Not no, Joel Embiid, I'm sorry.
Joel Embiid. Like,
Jesus, I'd love to have Joel Embiid. No, give me Joel.
I know who you mean. Yeah. Right. And you know what? I was a big proponent, and you can vouch. I was on that kid before anybody was, saying this kid's going to be a really good player. Honestly, I'm an alum.
And Tom Wick came out of nowhere last year.
I'm tired of the losing. I mean, this is your bread and butter program. I hate BYU. I cannot stand that school. And their phony fans and their holier than thou attitude
and
on the 28-year-old
freshmen.
I know, that drives you nuts. He's been on a mission for 32 years.
Yeah, okay. You know, he has a wife and three kids.
To go up to Salt Lake and play on a, quote, neutral court. Granted, they did not play at the Marriott Center. They played in downtown Salt Lake. And to get blown out like that, humiliated by that school, I take that personally as an alum.
Yeah.
And it's bothersome. I'm sorry. There are concerns, and the
your
fact
starting
that
point guard has two assists.
Well, the fact that at this point, it doesn't really seem like there's any consistency.
No.
And so here's the thing. I always got to throw my football spin on there because the
and
head
it's not,
coaching
and it's
search
not
for
that
football
young
continues.
Of a team. No, that's the thing. It's not like you're starting five freshmen.
Yeah, no. there's some age on there, but this is like the concern now going with the football program too. That I have for next year. If the feeling is the same for next year, because I think football is going to should be in a win quicker mode because of what's been built. If you start the season and lose this way as the new head coach, whoever the new head coach is,
you may as well stay at Sam Boyd Stadium.
It looks like right? The way things are going, it looks like we're not going to get the big name we thought we were going to get. I mean, it's been, what, 3 weeks now? Two and a half weeks?
Did anybody really think that they were going to get the big name?
You're seeing the people that, you know, were big name targets that are getting taken off the board left and right here.
Well, they talked about spending more money, Meg, so I thought you'd get a decent name. But
I know where Caleb's going with this because I saw the tweet yesterday.
You go get an FCS guy who's winning in the FCS and he's a young up-and-comer in the FCS, and then he comes in and he loses in the first four games, two of the first four. And then conference play, you start losing conference games. And the first season, it's like, well, here we go again. And then you get that feeling as a fan, like, here we go again. Maybe we were better off keeping Sanchez. And then that feeling starts to creep around again.
Just like what he said about Menzies earlier.
Absolutely.
But I still believe this, and I'm going to end it on this note, and we'll go to break. Here's the deal. I still believe that the incumbent, the guy coming in next, is being put in the best situation a UNLV football coach has been put in quite some time.
No doubt.
Because of his opportunity to recruit and because of what Tony Sanchez did, because of getting the Fertitta Center built, because of the fact now they have Allegiant Stadium coming in next season. This is a lucrative job right now. And even if the job's only going to pay you $900,000 a year, you can come in and make a name for yourself with this team because you should be able to recruit Las Vegas, an NFL stadium, and one of the best workout and practice facilities in the country. How can you not recruit right now? You should be able to. I think this is a lucrative job, and I think there is a name coach, a coordinator from a big-time program that would consider UNLV where maybe 5 years ago they wouldn't have. It's not as much money as they might like, but again, it is an opportunity to build a reputation, and I think the one thing that you want to be able to do as a collegiate coach is recruit, and I think right now the opportunity is here to recruit. If I'm UNLV, I find a guy that's got a history of recruiting well, that, man, right now that person should be able to do real well at UNLV. Listen, on the other side, we've got Nightcap. We'll talk a little bit about the Vegas Golden Knights, who have been playing better lately. They're back on the ice tonight at T-Mobile Arena this afternoon, so you want to check that out. We got Blazin' coming up, some pretty cool stuff there. S&B with C, the Raiders, after looking a couple of weeks ago like a playoff team, have lost back-to-back games against teams, not that they should have beaten. Kansas City was definitely a tough opponent, but 2 weeks ago against the Jets and 3 weeks ago they barely got by the Cincinnati Bengals by 7 points. That is a concern, and we'll talk about that. We've got week 14 in the NFL coming up, and of course our pick segments all here on Out of Line, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM. We'll be right back.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Yeah, we'll fly through Nightcap, a cup of the Vegas Golden Knights. The Golden Knights were really struggling for a minute there, and Chris has pointed out a few times, you know, a guy that is at every single game, at most every single practice at City National Arena, has said that he is in fear that this is not a playoff team this year. And they're definitely not as good as they have been the last 2 years. They're not as good as the team that lost in Game 7 to the San Jose Sharks in the first round last year of the Stanley Cup playoffs. However, this team is playing better, Chris. They've definitely improved since the loss to Nashville, since the loss to Dallas, they have been pretty good. They've won 4 of 5 games, and you can't really complain about the game against the Islanders. The Islanders are one of the best teams in hockey, and they lost in overtime 3-2. The team is playing better.
Yeah, they're playing a lot better, and I think a lot of that is Alex Tuch is healthy. That's a key. Malcolm Subban has been given a chance. They told him, look, this is your stretch of games. Marc-Andre Fleury is going to be back in net tonight, I will assume. And I'm keeping my fingers crossed. I think for the first time at T-Mobile, we will get to see Henrik Lundqvist, the only active goalie in the NHL who's ahead of Marc-Andre Fleury in wins. I think he's 4 or 5 ahead of Fleury in terms of all-time wins. So if you're at T-Mobile today, you're lucky because it's the first time Lundqvist will play. Georgiev got the last start for the Rangers. That was 2 days ago.
Yep.
So I think it's going to be Henrik Lundqvist and Marc-Andre Fleury tonight in net. We will get to see
two Hall of Fame goaltenders.
Two absolute Hall of Fame goalies.
Yeah.
And two bona fide first ballot Hall of Fame goalies playing at T-Mobile Arena. I can't think I don't think Carey Price started here. I think he came in as a sub for Antti Niemi in year one. I don't think he played in year two, and he didn't play this last time. So, you know, this is a rare opportunity for Golden Knights fans to see two guys who are surefire. So if there's tickets available and you have the opportunity to go, I hate to be like a tout.
No,
it's exciting because I've never gotten to see Lundqvist play.
Yeah, no, it's pretty cool. To me, this is a similar situation to see two great goaltenders, like when we see them play the Boston Bruins and Tuukka Rask play Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yeah,
it's that quality of goaltending you're going to see.
Except Lundqvist is I mean, Tuukka Rask is really good, but I think Lundqvist, when he was in his prime, was absolutely...
He was, but you also got Jonathan Quick you've got to see come to town a pretty damn good goaltender,
but I mean, these are two guys who are top five and top six in wins all time. So,
both these guys have stood the test of time, and that's what's pretty cool.
I think one of the other keys, and I kind of mentioned the other day on the Insider Show, but I was a big proponent and a big backer of Cody Eakin. I think my opinion last week has changed a little bit because now that Cody Glass has moved to center and he's filling in for Cody Eakin, who was injured, we still don't know much about his return.
The extent of that, yeah.
But Cody Glass at center, I think, has really kind of sparked Alex Tuch, and Alex Tuch is playing with a chip on his shoulder. You know, I talked to him a couple times after his second injury, and he was unbelievably frustrated. He's like, you know, I want to play. I don't want to be injured, and I don't think anybody wants to, and he kind of said, you know, maybe there was a reason behind it, and maybe it's kind of sparked him a little bit, made him play with a little more of a chip because
Chris, because last year he fell off from what he did his rookie season.
He's got 7 points in the last four games for the team. He's got he had a game-winning goal against the Rangers just a week ago, and he scored a power play goal against the Coyotes, and he scored the winner in the shootout against the Coyotes, so... He's playing well. He had 3 assists against the Devils in the Marchessault hat trick game. I think today's going to be a good game because I feel like the Rangers have been playing better. And, you know, we will see because Marc-Andre Fleury, I imagine the ovation he gets when he's introduced tonight will be deafening at T-Mobile Arena.
Well, I agree. I think, you know, I think the next two games are crucial for the Golden Knights. They're two games that they should win them both.
And these two games, extend your point streak to 7 games. You kind of... You see what's happening behind you. The Sharks got absolutely humiliated last night by the Lightning 7-1. They're not playing well. They're on the road. Vancouver won in overtime last night. But, you know, the thing is, the division all of a sudden is within grasp. And I think if this team goes on a hot streak and gets to the top of the division, they won't look back. That's kind of the way I feel. You know, I've been searching for consistency, and that's really all I wanted to see. Give me some consistency.
And lately we've seen it.
This team all of a sudden has found it.
Playing better defensively. They're controlling the puck in the neutral zone a lot better than they have been in the past.
And a guy who gets the fans seem to really ride him. But Derek England's played a lot better the last week or so. I mean, he's looked a lot better. He had a big assist the other night. John Merrill had an assist, I think, on the tying goal against the Islanders.
Both those guys have needed to play better, though.
Yeah,
and they have.
You know, the Nick Hague has looked really good as well. So I feel like things are starting to come together. I don't want to jump the gun, but I feel like this team has the capability to really go on a run. If they get points in these next two games, all of a sudden they go on the road, Dallas and St. Louis again, come home for Vancouver. By the time we get to Christmas, this team could be in first place.
They could be. Vegas Golden Knights, again, 4 p.m. today. They will be at T-Mobile Arena against the New York Rangers. Tuesday night, they'll be playing at 7 o'clock against the Blackhawks, also at T-Mobile Arena. Then they go on the road for a couple of games Thursday and Friday, back-to-back games. They'll play in St. Louis, and as Chris said, also in Dallas. And then they come back again next Sunday for a 5 o'clock game against the Vancouver Canucks. Big week for the Golden Knights. I would like to see them win these next two games. Real quick, let's hit Blazin'. Blazin' is brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, North Durango, and the 215 in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. It is a long three-pointer from Centennial Hills Hospital, and of course, America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. Two happy hours every day, and we are out there every Monday night for Monday Night Football. Me and the Wiz, come on out and join us tomorrow night. We'll be out at Buffalo Wild Wings, giving away some wing parties, some glassware. It's always a good time. Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 and North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. I'll start off Blazin' today, guys, and I'll tell you, I don't usually, you know, I start watching the NBA more midseason. I know you're watching it regularly this year because the Lakers are playing well, but being a Pistons fan, it's kind of difficult for me to watch him. Although, you know, I like Blake Griffin. I think he's been a good addition to this team. He's a guy that has trouble making it through a full season, injury plague throughout his career, although he's been fairly healthy with the Pistons. You know, it's a team that, unfortunately, for the four major professional sports, the Pistons are the best Detroit has to offer, but that's my reason for not watching a lot of hoops. But I'll tell you what, yesterday, Russell Westbrook, again, if you didn't hear, got another triple-double for the Houston Rockets. They beat the Phoenix Suns 115-109. But that triple-double, Russell Westbrook became the fourth player in NBA history with 40 triple-doubles after turning 30. Only three other players have done that in their career. He's in pretty good company. Wilt Chamberlain, Jason Kidd, LeBron James. And now Russell Westbrook adds his name to that. 40 triple-doubles over the age of 30. I'm not a fan of the guy. I've always thought, you know, even though he gets a lot of assists, I thought he was one of the most selfish players in the NBA. He has had trouble not so much getting along with teammates, but getting along with the public and getting along with the media. Not that you have to, but it's bothersome. And yet, he is one hell of a basketball player, and I'm going to say when you got 40 triple-doubles over the age of 30 and you're in the company of Wilt Chamberlain, Jason Kidd, and LeBron James, I'd say that's pretty Blazin'.
31, too? Huh. Isn't he like 31?
31, yeah.
That makes it even more impressive. Yeah, a year after 30, you get 40 triple-doubles.
It's pretty quick. Crazy, man. Pretty crazy.
Yeah. I agree. That's cool.
So he's Blazin'. What do you got?
Of course, I'm going college football because of what just happened. Championship weekend is Blazin', so it's going to be from college football. And, of course, I think we talked about it a little bit earlier on and off the air, Joe Burrow, the hottest quarterback arguably ever in college football. Had a chance. I don't know if he will finish it. He's right now at 77.9% completion rate on the season. And he had a chance to have, you know, with the two playoff games remaining, to finish his career with the highest completion percentage in FBS history. That's got to be good. Also, he's destroyed two of the better defenses in the SEC, Alabama, and then Georgia. Just absolutely dismantled them and looks good doing it. He should be, in my opinion, the first unanimous Heisman winner. We still got to look that up if there's been a unanimous Heisman. I doubt it, though, with the amount of votes that go into that thing. But I don't see him losing the Heisman. I'd be utterly shocked and disappointed if he lost. He's been the most accurate quarterback all season long. He's had no bad games, like we mentioned earlier, and he finished with, I guess, his stamp on the Heisman campaign with his performance against Georgia when he dismantled them in Georgia, in Atlanta, basically home field advantage for the Bulldogs there, and he went to town on them. But I think he's blazing. He's been blazing all season. I hope he finishes the season strong. I think LSU should be favored to win it all, and Joe Burrow is the big reason why he's blazing.
He's on both sides. He's blazing, and he's as cool as the other side of the pillow, man. The guy is ridiculous. He really is. Chris, what do you got, brother?
Real quick, Liberty High School state championship, first time in 10 years.
Centennial,
that Gorman is up. Crushed Centennial 50-7. The Patriots, their first state championship in football. They did it the right way. They beat Gorman at their own game. Congratulations to the Patriots of Liberty High School, Nevada state champs. 50-7 winners over the Bulldogs of Centennial.
Mitch Morocco, head coach of Liberty, and give the guy credit, man.
A lot of Hawaiian connections there.
And when you look at a state championship team, you're talking about the two best teams in the state in that division. And when you win by the margin they won, this is a pretty damn good football team. I wish I would have gotten out there and seen it, even though it wasn't much of a game.
Yeah.
You're talking about an offensive juggernaut in this Liberty team. They put a lot of points on the board. They've been doing it all year. And they don't just do it offensively. And what's crazy is a lot of their guys are two-way players. And when you're playing about six or seven, I believe I read, are two-way players. That is a lot of time on the field for a lot of guys, so it's even more impressive. And you talk about conditioning. That is a coach that knows how to condition his team when most of your guys are going two ways and you're winning a state title. That is really, really big. Hey, let's move on real quick and let's do S&B with C. The Raiders, man, what is up with this team? I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I was starting to believe. I was drinking the Derek Carr Kool-Aid. I'm drinking the John Gruden Kool-Aid. Then they barely beat Cincinnati by 7. I'm like, okay, you know, Cincinnati is going to stand up and play a game every
Cincinnati's
now and
then. They won.
And won a game. They've won a game. You're going to stand up. But let's be realistic. I mean, then you go to New York and you get absolutely dismantled by the Jets. The Jets have played better and better. Le'Veon Bell playing better football.
Yeah.
They're getting a little bit better football play out of the quarterback position, but still, you don't get beaten by that margin. And then they go to Kansas City and get whitewashed again. They, you know, score 9 points or 11, whatever it was, and Kansas City beats them pretty badly. Now they've got one of the hottest teams in football in the Tennessee Titans coming in.
Yeah.
And
they're chasing the Titans to get into the playoff picture.
I mean,
the
Raiders Henry is playing great football, and so is Tannehill.
Yeah, and the Raiders aren't out of it right now, but I think that's just because of the way the numbers work. If you look at the way things are shaping up, the teams that they're chasing in the Steelers and the Titans, they are playing pretty well right now. And then you got a couple people out again. Trent Brown's out for the Raiders. Josh Jacobs with a shoulder, hardly participated in practice yesterday. So you don't know. You don't know if he's going to be fully available. So he's one of your best players. I mean, obviously he's had a fantastic rookie season. So if he's out, of course, Hunter Renfrow's out with his rib. He's going to be done. So you're not going to be at 100% when you need to be at 100% late to close out the season. Derek Carr has turned into, I guess the new nickname is Cold Weather Carr, where he's just not as good late in the season.
I'm going to use a word of Derek Carr, pedestrian.
He's pedestrian. Oh, I like it. He's been very pedestrian over the last few weeks, and you don't need him to be playing very pedestrian when you're trying to get into the playoff picture. So I think even though numerically and by the schedule they're not eliminated, I think this is the stretch where they needed to be playing the best football, and they're not. And the teams that they need to lose and help them out to get into the playoffs are winning, actually. So I think the Titans have found a rhythm. Like you said, Henry's playing well. I don't see this going very good for the Raiders this week. And then I think this is pretty much the fork in the coffin, or the fork that doesn't end.
Finishes him. Yeah, I said today they have to win at home against Tennessee. I don't care that Tennessee's 7-5. Ryan Tannehill is not the second coming. He's played really well for the Titans since taking over for Marcus Mariota, but I wouldn't count on Tennessee is not that great of a team. The Raiders, if they're going to have any hope, obviously they need to win this game. Chris, let's take that final break. We'll come back real quick with the picks of the week and NFL Week 14. All right, we are back. Brian Feldman, Caleb Herring, Chris Magnum, Chapman and the Wiz, out of line, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. And real quickly, man, week 13 is over. Week 14, we are winding down. Fantasy football coaches and are getting their stuff together for the playoffs. And here we are, a huge pivotal week for some teams this week. And let's just get right to our picks of the week. And we'll start off with that. And you know what? I'm going to go with the kid first because check this out. All of us last week, well, if Chris wouldn't have gone against the Wiz, we might have gone 4-0 for the
what
second
are you
week in a
going
row.
Against the Wiz,
the, you know what? The funny thing is, my other, I was really thinking about Washington. And they ended up coming back to beat the Panthers.
They did. Wow.
But,
they did. You know what? I'm not going to say there are any great teams in the NFL this year, but there are definitely some really bad teams in the NFL this year. I'm not going to call it parity, maybe more up top. But, Wiz, what do you got? Because I'll tell you this, Wiz, again, 2 weeks in a row now, he's bringing back the guests. We let him on. 6-8, and last week going up against Mags, he took the Bucks at the Jags and gave up the 2.5 points, and they still won it on the road. Who are you picking this week, Wiz?
Derek Carr is a soggy napkin. I'm taking Tennessee -3. I can't stand him at quarterback, so there's no way they're going to beat Tennessee. I just don't believe it.
A soggy napkin. I like that. I think more people might have used that. More people might have used that to define his brother David, who had a pretty bad career. But I always say no quarterback in the history in the NFL was screwed more than David Carr, yeah, having to go to the Houston Texans.
You're right, the Texans. Yeah,
yeah, to go there at the beginning.
He got his butt kicked.
His first year with the Texans, to this day, no one's ever been sacked more in one season.
I'm going to go with my pick. I struggle to pick this because the spread is big. I think it's 13.5 or 13. But I'm going Packers over the Redskins because it's playoff time, and I think the Packers are getting geared up to make a playoff run this year.
You are still going to do it, and it is 13. Okay, Chris, what do you got?
Well, I'm going to go against my Jets. I think Miami on the road is a good play here. Jamal Adams, doubtful for the Jets. No Le'Veon Bell. Ryan Fitzpatrick has the fourth most passing yards in the NFL since Week 7. The Dolphins have won a couple games. They beat the Eagles last week. Not a good spot for the Jets. I just don't have a lot of confidence in them coming off of last week's loss to the Bengals.
He's going to take the Dolphins, getting 5 points on the road at the Jets. And I was going to go with the Raiders, but I'm going with the Detroit Lions at Minnesota divisional game. They're getting 13 points. That third string quarterback, Blau won't blow today. Hey, listen, we're out of time. We'll be back next week, same time, same place, here in the Residential Bank Corp Fox Sports Studio. This is Out of Line. I'm Brian Feldman for Caleb Herring, for Chris Magnum Chapman and the Wiz. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.